What I want to do today is just take a look at a scene from Amadeus, conveniently a play turned into a film by the same writer, which is not always the case. Peter Schaffer wrote both the play and the film. And I want to look at just a short scene from that today. How many of you have seen Amadeus, the film? Very good. But not all of you. Okay. Maybe it requires a quick plot summary. Schaffer, as perhaps some of you know, is our most God-intoxicated playwright working today. He's still a relatively young man. He's in his late 60s. I hope more plays are going to come from him. But his plays always turn on some question of God. And in order to get at that question, he usually pits two male antagonists and protagonists against each other, both of whom are absolutely dependent upon the other for some aspect of their life. And therefore, the drama is more intense. You're absolutely dependent upon someone, but you're also absolutely opposed to them. So that when, in many of his plays, one kills the other, it's also suicide for the murderer. If you kill someone you're absolutely dependent upon, it's like a boomerang or a ricochet. The murderer comes back and kills you. In Amadeus, Schaffer turns to one of his usual ways of setting dramatic action. Between Antonio Salieri and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Amadeus is Mozart's middle name, which gives the title to the play. Amadeus means beloved of God. And that can be a curse. It's like Theodore, beloved of God. And the play is about Salieri, not about Mozart. And Schaffer typically does that. He takes the lesser character and makes that character's story the drama of his play. And in almost all of his plays, he has one character narrate the story to the audience. It's storytelling. And in Amadeus, he has Salieri come forward, address the audience directly, and tell the story to the audience. And this is his story, very quickly. Salieri, as a small boy in a northern Italian town in the 18th century, a poor peasant, small businessman, stock, gets a vision that he wants to be the composer of the greatest music in Europe. To be famous for it, yes, but to serve God with absolute music. Music that could not be better, could not be perfected. And he goes to the village church where all of the other people in the village go to make their bargains with God. Oh God, if you bring my ship safely through from Padua to Verona so that all of my goatskins arrive safely, I will give you 10% of my profits. That's the piety of that village. And Salieri makes, at 16, a vow to God, if you give me the gift of absolute music, I will devote my life to virtue, chastity, and charity, and I will serve your people with that gift of music. And he makes that bargain with God. The next day, a strange benefactor comes with money to send Salieri off to music school at the convenient death of his father. God has answered his bargain. And Salieri goes off and rises almost meteorically as a musician and a composer until he finally becomes the court composer to Emperor Joseph in Vienna. That's way up there. You've made it. And he keeps his bargain. He lives chastely, lives generously, devotes himself totally to the gift of music, and that's his whole life. He believes that God is keeping his part of the bargain, and he, for his part, Salieri, will keep his. Perfect faith and covenant. Along comes a randy, obscene, foul-mouthed scamp, young Mozart, who is the most unlikely servant of God. And Salieri hears some of Mozart's music. What's this? God is giving his gift of absolute beautiful music, not to me, the virtuous, honest, chaste Salieri. God is giving his gift of absolute music to this spoiled brat, Mozart. This drives Salieri markers. And Salieri begins to oppose Mozart. Because what Salieri concludes is that God mocked him. All God did, from Salieri's viewpoint, was give him just enough talent, just enough skill, just enough artistry to recognize the true genius of Mozart. Had he not had that talent, artistry, and skill, he wouldn't have recognized the genius of Mozart. Indeed, most people in Mozart's day did not recognize Mozart's genius. And that's what brings these two characters together so dependently. Only Salieri knows how good Mozart is. And Salieri is ravenously jealous. Well, if you decide God is mocking you, setting you up only to humiliate you, Salieri does what a good rebel does. He will oppose God. God is not mocked. Man is not mocked either. I, Salieri, won't be mocked. God cannot use and abuse me this way. And so he decides that he will destroy God's voice on earth, Mozart. And by machinations which you can read or see the play discover, he begins to oppose Mozart in ways that Mozart doesn't know. In fact, Mozart thinks Salieri is his deepest friend. But Mozart finds that he's not getting the commissions, not getting the appointments, not getting the pupils. And Salieri is in the background starving God's voice out of Mozart. Well, Mozart does reach an early death, middle 30s, dies a pauper, not enough to feed his children, or even to put a fire in his rooms. And in the chill and in the starvation, Mozart dies, composing his own Requiem. And Salieri has his victory. He has destroyed God's voice on earth, and God will not mock Salieri again. And then what does God do, according to Salieri? Mozart is now dead. There is no musician equal to Salieri. Indeed, Mozart is superior to Salieri. Mozart's music isn't played anymore. That was that randy, scampy, vulgar, obscene musician who died an early death. We don't play his music. And Salieri's music becomes all the rage for the next 40 years in Europe. Most famous composer, conductor in Europe. We may not remember his name. Point of the play, pardon. But Salieri's fame, fortune, honor goes to the tippy top of the European world court nobility. Now what's God doing? Salieri discovers that God set him up again, because what does God do? He gives Salieri a long life. Long enough to see his fame rise, and then to see that Salieri's music becomes old hat, what we used to play, the old music, not so popular anymore. And the excruciating punishment of Salieri is that he has the fame and then must live long enough to see it decline. Then, turning the screw, what does God do? He allows Mozart's music to rise in fame, popularity, and approval. And Salieri has to live through that. Well, God has marked Salieri again. Next scene of the battle. Salieri decides, okay, I'm still going to have fame, even if it's infamy. I'm going to confess that I killed Mozart, so that at least where the fame of Mozart spreads throughout the world, my name will always be mentioned with Mozart's as his murderer. And he writes a confession, which to this day we don't know was whether true or false. He claims he poisoned Mozart with arsenic. This, by the way, is historically true. That is to say, he did make that claim. And hopes now to get infamy. And what happens? People think, oh, that's just the raving of a senile, doddering old man. And so Salieri decides to prove that he killed Mozart by showing that the guilt was so unbearable that he has his barber leave him, takes a razor, slits his throat on the stage. End of play. Now, that's the plot, roughly, those of you who have seen it. The play is slightly different from the film for reasons we can discuss if you like later, and I can tell you more about Schaffer if you're interested a little bit later. I think what I'd like to do before I show the excerpt from the video is simply to give an example of how Schaffer uses an experience of death for the audience. The play, and I can't go into it today because it would take us well beyond the hour, but the Requiem in the play is composed because Mozart has a vivid experience of death. In other words, Mozart thinks it is death itself that is requesting he write the Requiem. Imagine a composer's mind if you thought you were writing a Requiem Mass for death itself. Can't go into that, or we can tomorrow if you wish. But what I want to do now is just to show you how a playwright can put the audience through an experience of death. In other words, we must die and be reborn no sooner than we have sat down in our seats in the theater. What Schaffer does, typically, is to make the main character, or not always the main character, but a character, narrate the play, so that we never have a sense that this is complete an illusion, we're just looking in on reality, but we always have one character that speaks directly to us as 20th century audience members. In this play, he uses Salieri himself. The second scene is Salieri's apartment in 1823. Salieri is now in his late 70s. He's going to confess to us, seek our absolution for what he did 40 years ago, namely kill Mozart. And the character playing Salieri begins, and I've got to get into some light so I can see this. Speaking directly to us now, seated in the theater. Vi saluto, ombri del futuro, Antonio Salieri, a vostro servizio. That's all the Italian you have to know. It means, I salute you, shadows of the future, Antonio Salieri, at your service. Immediately we walk into the theater, what have we become? Shadows of the future. We're sitting there in 1988, he's back there in 1823. How can we relate to each other? Well, we're the unborn. and he's going to have to bring us to birth. I can almost see you in your ranks, seats in the theater, waiting for your turn to live. Ghosts of the future, be visible, I beg you. Come to this dusty old room. This time, the smallest hours of dark November, 1823, and be my confessors. Will you not enter this place and stay with me till dawn, just till dawn, smeary 6 o'clock? Salieri, 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 whispering signs. Can you hear them? Vienna is a city of slander. Everyone tells tales here, even my servants. I keep only 2 now. They've been with me ever since I came here 50 years ago. The keeper of the razor, the maker of the cakes. One keeps me tidy, the other keeps me full. Leave me, both of you, tonight. I do not go to bed at all. He's contemplating. And he wants the servants out of the way. Return here tomorrow at 6 precisely to shave and to feed your capricious master. Via, 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 via. Grazie. Go, 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 go. Thanks. Turning back to the audience. Now won't you appear? I need you desperately. This is the last hour of my life. Those about to die implore you. What must I do to make you visible? Raise you up in the flesh to be my last audience. Does it take an invocation? That's how it's always done in opera. Ah, yes, of course, that's it. An invocation, the only way. Let me try to conjure you now, ghosts of the distant future, so I can see you. He gets out of his wheelchair, he goes over to a pianoforte, and he starts banging out an invocation, singing, as the direction says, a recitativo secco, a dry recitative. Ghosts of the future! Shades of time to come, so much more unavoidable than those of time gone by. It's far harder to avoid the ghosts of the future, posterity, than the ghosts of the past, our forebears. We sin more against those to be born than to those who have preceded us. Appear with what sympathy incarnation may endow you. Appear you, the yet to be born, the yet to hate, the yet to kill. Appear, posterity! And the whole lights in the theater rise, and we suddenly look to our right and left, and we see our neighbors. And the light in the audience area is the same light on the stage area. We're suddenly drawn into a kind of equality of time. And we suddenly realize all of our neighbors around us, we've just been born into 1823. He took us, whatever our state is before we're born, souls in heaven, winks in our father's eyes, whatever our existence is before our physical time on earth, with an invocation, he took us and brought us into 1823. So that we can sit here as confession. Now that's just an example of how a playwright uses a kind of death and life experience to move his action. Because at the end of this play, we're going to have to decide, do we forgive Salieri or not? Indeed, at the end of the play, Salieri is going to turn and forgive us all for being as mediocre as he is. Okay, what I'd like to do now, I realize I'm taking too much of your time, just take a look at a scene from the play, and here, let's see what happens when a gift of God, so received with gratitude, becomes instead God mocking Salieri, which then arouses Salieri's rebellion. Just tell me how it happens. Salieri composing a tune for Mozart's entrance to the court. Mm-hmm.
I had this is a beautiful wig for you. This looks so marvelous and I love it.
The other one.
Here's the other one. I think you will love it. Here's the third one. So, if you go, how do you like it?
They're all so beautiful. Why do I have three heads? Well, what do you have for me today?
Your Majesty, Herr Mozart.
Yes, what about
it? He's here.
Well, there it is. Good.
Your Majesty, I hope you won't find it improper, but I've written a little march of welcome in his honor.
What a charming idea, Court Composer. May I see?
Mio caro Adonde.
Well, I'm flattered.
A funny little tune, but it yielded some good things.
And now he has returned the compliment. Herr Salieri composed this little march of welcome for you.
Really? Oh, grazie, signore. Sono commosso.
Well, there it is. Now, down to business. Young man, we're going to commission an opera from you. What do you say?
Majesty.
Did we vote in the end for German or Italian?
Well, actually, sire, if you remember, we did finally incline to Italian.
Did we?
I don't think it was really decided, Your Majesty. Oh, German. German, please. Let it be German.
Why so?
Because I've already found the most wonderful libretto.
Oh. Have I seen it?
I don't think you have, Herr Director. Not yet. I mean, it's quite new. I'll show it to you immediately, of course.
I think you'd better.
Well, tell us about it. Tell us the story.
Well, it's quite amusing, Majesty. It's set, the whole thing is set
Yes. Where?
In a harem, Majesty. In a seraglio.
You mean in Turkey?
Yes, exactly.
Well, then why especially does it have to be in German?
Well, it doesn't especially. It could be in Turkish if you really want.
No, my dear fellow, the language is not finally the point. Do you really think that subject is quite appropriate for a national theater?
Why not? It's charming. I mean, I won't actually show concubines exposing their... Oh! It's not indecent. It's highly moral, Majesty. It's full of proper German virtues.
Excuse me, Majesty, but what do you think these could be? Being a foreigner, I would love to learn.
Well, tell him, Mozart. Name us a German virtue.
Love, sire.
Oh, love! Well, of course, in Italy we know nothing about love.
No, I don't think you do. I mean, watching Italian opera, all those male sopranos screeching, stupid fat couples rolling their eyes about, that's not love, it's just rubbish. Majesty, you choose the language. It will be my task to set it to the finest music ever offered a monarch.
Oh, there it is. Let it be German. Oh, this is yours.
Keep it, Majesty, if you want. It's already here in my head.
What? On one hearing only?
I think so, sire. Yes?
Show us.
Thank you.
they make me mute. Why?
What happened to the gift of God that Salieri got? And at the very end, says to God, thanks, but no thanks. What happened? Why did Salieri's feelings change or his mind change? It's still a good tune, isn't it?
But it wasn't a great tune.
Sorry?
But it wasn't a great tune.
No.
He saw a talent much better than himself. Mm-hmm. Jealous.
Why can't Salieri just celebrate his own gift? It's a good tune. Or why can't he celebrate the fact that isn't this world wonderful? God gives me good tunes, and he gives other people the gift to make them better. What do we learn about Salieri's character in that scene?
He's jealous.
Yeah. What's the origin of jealousy? Let me ask it this way. Would it have been different if Salieri and Mozart had been in a room by themselves? What would have been different?
No one else would have heard it. Mm-hmm.
So what? The beginning of jealousy is in humiliation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now there has to be other people there. Why did Salieri give the gift of the march to the emperor at all?
In praise.
Okay, so jealousy begins in humiliation. And you offer a gift to get praise, and instead you get one up. Do you believe Salieri when he says to the emperor, it's just a trifle? Other comments on the scene?
Isn't it possible, though, too, that Salieri saw his gift from God as being sort of unidimensional, as only the gift of music, and it's almost as if we're telling God what his gift to us is, and taking a major role in making it in the lives of others, whereas God has various purposes, and maybe a purpose for Salieri was to be a mentor and patron or whatever to Mozart, so that Mozart's gift from God could come forward. I think that when we think of vocation and so on, we need to let that come from God and not from us. Mm-hmm. And that may not be stagnant. It may have been a gift from God at one time, but perhaps there were other gifts that he was ignoring in his obsession with this single gift that he had at an earlier point in his life to meet the needs of that time.
Oh, I find that very helpful. Yeah, the jealousy begins if you think you have only one gift and someone else has a better gift of that kind. And the more obsessive and single-minded you are about that one gift, the more likely you are to be jealous. Yeah. In other words, jealousy begins by not seeing all of God's gifts, but by focusing only on the one you're obsessed about. And jealousy begins when you're not ready to be changed by God's gift. I love the comment you make. What God's gift could have been to Salieri is the chance to be the mentor of Mozart. Mm-hmm.
And I think with a gift from God, too, that we're like a trustee of that gift. And I think he felt himself the owner rather than the trustee.
Yeah, he was unwilling to be changed by the gift of Mozart. Mm-hmm. Other comments on the scene?
Well, it really seems to me, I've seen the whole movie a couple times, yeah, that in terms of Mozart's gift, Mozart doesn't really have control of the gift. Mozart just wants to get that music out, and it just has to come, and he plays with it, and he doesn't do it for the recognition so much as just to do the music, for that's not what Salieri does at all. He does it for the recognition, and maybe from God, but from others as well.
Yes, I think, you know, one of the things that arouses the jealousy is that Mozart does unselfconsciously, effortlessly, in pure childlike joy, what Salieri sweated for. You know, I think Salieri could have avoided jealousy if Mozart was just as hardworking and obsessive a musician as he was. Because then you'd have two neurotics. But to have that gift that Mozart has, on the one hand, you know, Schaffer is neat. He doesn't make Mozart into a little saint. I mean, Mozart is perfectly despicable in this scene. But he has no knowledge, apparently, or at least self-consciousness, to know the effect he's having on Salieri and everyone else. Yeah.
Mozart displays no respect for Salieri, either for his talent or his age. Salieri is a little older and might expect that he would be deferred to even if they were equal in talent. Mm-hmm. And that's a put down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what makes it harder is that Mozart comes in with just as much a desire to impress and please his patron, prince, as does Salieri with the gift of the march. I mean, Mozart is really putting on airs in that scene. The playwright is very careful to keep these characters sort of equal in some ways. What else did you see in the scene that might explain jealousy? Is there any other way that Mozart humiliates Salieri other than improving upon his music?
The fact that he knew it without even looking at the notes was like, it was so simple or easy to him that he could just hear it once and sit down quiet.
Even after that poor rendition.
Yes, the flattery of the monarch is going on here. Yeah.
And he changed it.
Yeah, it became the march to the marriage of Figaro, didn't it? Yeah. What's the playwright doing, in your eye, with the comparison and contrast of German and Italian opera? Salieri is Italian, Mozart is German. Why did the playwright put that by play in there? Italians know nothing of love. The German virtue is love. What did you make of that?
Well, it builds up sort of a parallel conflict. I mean, you're going to have him composing this music, and you're just building, it seems like you're just building sort of a almost an analogous conflict with the German, Italian, or I don't know, sort of just parallel. Just here's this the Romance language Italian and in the old traditions versus, you know, the newer German, kind of a coarser upstart. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between that, the Salieri and the Italian and the Mozart German.
Are you saying that the playwright uses Mozart sort of as a symbol of the whole of German society and culture, and Salieri is the whole of Italian society.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
In the beginning, they only composed operas in Italian, there was no German.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the fact that the scene is set in a way that it's the scene in which Mozart is shown wanting to make an opera not out of gods and goddesses or heroes and heroines, but out of women in a harem.
It just equally shows the contrast between the two men. I mean, like Ben built up the story beforehand about Salieri being a righteous man, or he viewed himself that way, and then he was trying to please God, and the contrast of him against Mozart, who wasn't.
Can you take it beyond simply contrast? Is there a judgment involved? Is it better to write operas about real people? And is it worse to write operas about idealized people or gods and goddesses?
Well, I'm sure Salieri would say, or felt it was best to write about virtuous. In this case, maybe they aren't real, but they are to be strived for. Mm-hmm. Versus, I'm sure he very much judged it.
Mm-hmm. Sort of reminds you of a guy who used to walk around the countryside eating it with tax collectors and sinners.
It makes Mozart more democratic, doesn't it? Mozart is going to write operas about real people and make them extraordinary, whereas Salieri writes operas about extraordinary people, gods and goddesses. And makes them ordinary. Yeah.
Doesn't it sort of counterpoint and underscore in some way the earlier point about the contrast between the Italian and the German, and some type of elitist standard versus the forthcoming popularist movement that now here, if you think about the traditions with the Saracens and Christianity and so on, you have sort of an infidel theme coming in. And if we're going to go down to the Germanic people and versus these other themes, what about a theme of a people that are somewhat not understood and out there, an outcast group, at least as they considered it at that time?
Some of Mozart's operas are about servants. Mm-hmm. Married to Figaro.
So maybe who these mortals are is really important, who intends to really drive home.
Could an ordinary person be in love? Or can only Venus?
In other words, in judgment, which plays a part in jealousy too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think what many of you are moving toward is that not only is Salieri being attacked musically, but he's being attacked culturally. Mm-hmm. What's worth writing about? What's worth composing about? Anything else in the scene that you think explains how jealousy arises? What do you make of the fact that the playwright makes the emperor play the tune rather than Salieri himself? Why was that thrown into the scene? If you were a playwright, why would you do it that way?
It made his humiliation greater, didn't it?
It made the contrast, mm-hmm, I think, much sharper. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, what you've done is you've made the emperor implicit, or you have sort of You've brought the emperor into the humiliation. It would be one thing if I played the tune, I, Salieri, and Mozart improved upon it. It's another thing if I got the emperor to play it, and to show that the emperor was playing an inferior piece of music which he highly praised. The player, it really thickens the plot there.
At the same time, there's some relief for Salieri in that, is there not? I mean, if Salieri were able to play it on his own, he could have shown it to be a much better piece of music than the emperor did, and mm-hmm. hence the contrast would not have been as great.
True. The playwright does make it very clear, though, that when Mozart sits down, he first plays it through the way Salieri had composed it. Anything else in the scene that makes the humiliation deeper and the jealousy, therefore, greener? Play it again. Why does the filmmaker intercut Salieri getting the inspiration, the tune, and composing with Mozart getting fitted for wings? Presumably films are made things. People chose to do it that way. Milos Forman, the director. Usually when a filmmaker cuts back and forth from two different locales, I mean, these two people now are far apart. Salieri is in his studio composing. Mozart is out at the wig makers getting powdered for wigs. And when a filmmaker juxtaposes these two scenes, taking apart in different locales, they're supposed to comment on each other. It's like a poet doing a metaphor, right? Why would you juxtapose Salieri at the hard work of composing that gift to the emperor with Mozart being fitted for wigs? No.
Salieri has to make such a great effort. It's such a great effort for him to write that simple piece, but here is Mozart getting fitted out to look pretty, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And it's no effort for him. He doesn't have to worry about his music. Mm-hmm.
So you think he juxtaposes that to...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that possibility.
Yeah.
He's more concerned with his physical appearance and the appearance he makes at the court, although he wasn't that great at it. He could just as well have come in a some other kind of uniform and he would have laughed at them. But
yeah.
I think that's a good point, though, what she said, that he didn't have to worry about his music. I think that everyone's seen that. You're in a job or anything, you work hard and you maybe have the same result, but there's this other person who has such talents that it just happens. And I think it's the same thing with him. He didn't have to worry. He didn't have to practice or worry he was going to be kept performed. If he did, it would just happen so easily. It was trivial. Whereas Salieri really had to work.
There's also a line in there, though, where Mozart is just reveling in the beauty of the wigs. Oh, they're so wonderful. Why can't I have three heads? And you get the idea that he sort of revels in beauty just for its own sake, mm-hmm. and not, you know, in the same way with his music, that you know, he's going to improve on this piece just because the beauty's itching to get out, and he wants to just sort of play with it, as opposed to the hard work ethic of the composition.
He can do it, and then I'll tell you, he can't.
Yeah. What else has three heads? Just before Mozart goes to the triad, which is called three heads.
The Trinity.
Elijah Monster.
Monster.
Well, the Trinity? No, wait.
Is there a theologian in the house? I think we've drifted into something called monarchical modalism. Three-headed Trinity. Yeah, I certainly think all that we've said is on point. What it is another way of, first of all, suggesting that Mozart is a monster, that he is a flibbertigibbet, that whatever God's voice, absolute music, is in Mozart, it is something that Mozart issues forth without effort, and indeed without virtue. Mozart is not a good person. God gives his gift to the world in this play through a person who is a flibbertigibbet, vain, trying to impress the court, treating wigs like, I don't know, a child in a toy shop. What the playwright is doing here, I think, is really suggesting that Mozart is simply a flute that God blows through. There's no virtue in Mozart at all. Which again, I think, heightens the jealousy. Because it would be easier, I think, for me, well, let me rephrase it another way. When I'm jealous of someone, if I know they've earned the gift, there is someone who just played at the end violin concerto beautifully, but gosh, they studied, they rehearsed, they sacrificed, they worked up that performance. I can't be quite as jealous of someone who's earned the beauty that they've given. But I can really be jealous of someone who, by no effort, has obtained something.
And giggles.
And giggles.
It's no thought. It's almost like it's by accident that Mozart even has it. It's like an idiot savant, almost. He's real shallow, but he has this gift.
How much more, then, would I believe that God is mocking me?
Yeah.
God is really turning the screws. Because if God sends a flibbertigibbet idiot to humiliate you, it shows what God thinks of you.
He makes the wrath of men to praise him.
Mm-hmm.
God does.
Okay, thank you. You've given me a lot of help on this scene. Thank you very much.